Good morning. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Jeff Bryant speaking to you, hosting the Fill-In Show. And this week, I had the chance to speak with Adam Schell. Adam is a Vancouver-based photographer, and he recently released a book called So It Is Vancouver in collaboration with his photographic collaborator, Kev Holloway. We talked about that. We talked about the book, which contains 95 portraits of Vancouverites getting soaked. We also talked about Playground, which is an award-winning project that they collaborated on in the past. We talked about a lot of things. We also talked about the state of digital photography in 2016. You can find out information about So It Is Vancouver and Playground and some of the other things we discussed at adamandkev.com. And here it is, my conversation with Adam Schell.
It's a coffee table book, and the idea behind it is that we want this book to exist on coffee tables, beside toilets, on bookshelves, next to beds, in the old cabin up by the lake.
I appreciate that of the list you're offering, it began with toilets. Is that's the preferred placement of the book?
I don't know if it's preferred. I just think it's one of those places that people put books.
It's a captive audience, right?
Yeah, and I'm wise to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's meant to be enjoyed piecemeal.
All right.
But it could also be, you know, you could sit down next to a fireplace with a nice sipping scotch or whatever your pleasure is, and just go all the way through and flip all the way through the book. And ultimately, it's a book about the people, culture, and history of Vancouver. And it's told through 95 portraits and with small written bits that go along with it, with each portrait.
And there's a lot of names people will recognize, like famous, notable Vancouverites, but also some names that they might not recognize, right?
Exactly, and that was the goal. Like, by no means is this book meant to be the who's who of Vancouver or any kind of elite list. It's certainly not exhaustive. And the idea is that we wanted to represent the diversity of Vancouver, and ultimately everyone in the book is remarkable in one way or another. We've got billionaires, Chip and Shannon Wilson, the Lululemon founders and designers that started that company, and you got Dave Suzuki. You've got Dr. Julio Montana, the man who has essentially changed the face of living with AIDS and HIV. He's based out of St. Paul. So you've got these names and people that have achieved a lot. And then on the other end of the scale, you've got people that you wouldn't have heard of, but within their own stories are remarkable with what they've done as well. And so, I mean, that's Vancouver. It's not just about the exciting big names. It's made up of all types of people, right?
And if you take a look at the book, there's a lot of people. It's close to 100. Is that right?
Well, there's 95 portraits. And
95 portraits.
I don't know exactly how many people are in the book. And the reason I say that is because some of the portraits have one person, some of them have two,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are... even there's bigger groups. So I've never actually done the math, but there's 95 portraits.
So how long did it take you to shoot 95 portraits? That sounds like it would take some time.
Yeah, it did take some time. And so when I keep referring to we, and so we would be myself and my business partner, Kev Holloway, a lovely little Englishman who I've shared a business with for the last 8.5 years.
I sense that might be true. I thought maybe he likes his preferred personal pronoun is we, or maybe he has an English partner.
Yeah, as it happens, your second guess was accurate.
I could have gone either way.
Yeah, it could have. So little Kevy Holloway is the other half of Adam and Kev Photography. And so we've been... As I said, we've been in business for 8.5 years, and you spend a lot of time with your business partner through those years. And you're constantly batting back ideas, and as you get inspired by certain things. And I think over the last 5 years, we've been very focused on exploring our creative inspirations into projects. And so this we talked about for probably about 4 years. And then 2 years ago, we actually started to kick it into gear, shape it a little bit more as a concept, and begin shooting. And so I should do the math and find out exactly how many people we shot in 2014. Mm-hmm. For this book, because it wasn't loads. It was probably like between 10 and 15 portraits. And then moving into 2015, we started to ramp it up more. And then last summer, 2015, we did a Kickstarter campaign, which finished September 2nd. And then our deadline for print was, I think, the end of October. So basically September, October, we shot close to 45 portraits. So we did the bulk of it we did at least half of it in about 2.5 months. And that was crazy.
Tune in every other Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. for Blood on the Saddle with your host, Dan N. The real authentic country.
So Kevin and I were in business, as I said, about 8.5 years ago we started. And probably about 2.5 years into the business, we were a little bit disillusioned with the type of work and the caliber of work that we were getting. And we weren't feeling inspired by what we were doing or happy. And so we made a conscious effort to only start taking on work that we were inspired by. And then also we just started to pursue creative projects. And so out of that came this project called Playground, which was a live music event series. It sort of really took place over about 3 years. And the concept was that we take a band and an audience, and we put them in a venue that's not a typical music venue, and we fit it out with music and sound recording equipment, so essentially it becomes like a makeshift recording studio. And then we have this event where there's free beer, the entry is free for the audience, and there's one challenge for the night, and that is for the band and the audience to collaborate on one piece of music and get it good, like collaborate for an hour or so that they can play it together, and then we record it all and turn it into a music video.
Get it good, but I mean, it's really get it as good as it can be and sort of see what happens, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. It was always, there was always a risk of this is not going to happen.
And it seemed like that was actually one of the things that made it fun and interesting for people was the sort of, it was kind of daring in that way. And everybody, because the audience was involved collaboratively, there was the possibility it would be a train wreck. And that kind of made it exciting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's terrifying at times too, but I mean, yeah, the fun thing about it was that it really happened just through sheer will of like, this is a cool concept, let's just run with it. And we tried to be as organized as we can. And I think what a big part of that was like, Kevin and I recognize we are not the best at what needs, you know, the skill sets that need to be involved in this. So we collaborated with other people to sort of make up a Playground team, from videographers to, you know, planners to sound engineers. And so the first event sort of happened and it was really just kind of grassrootsy. And then we did another one and then there was another one. Eventually we did 11 all up. And on our fifth one in, we landed funding from TELUS Optic Local, the TV, the local TV programming side of the TELUS brand. And they ended up funding six more events.
That were subsequently televised, right? Or available to watch if you're a TELUS customer, however that works.
Exactly. And we put them online as well, but they were sort of formatted for the TELUS Optic on demand.
It's interesting because both these projects, I mean, I'm sure there's people who are out there that are artists who are wondering how to cross the threshold from aspiring to create work, but you know, it feels like there's funding that needs to be involved and wondering how to bridge that gap. And for for you guys, you have two examples now of where you kind of started these projects on blind faith and hoped that by creating something that showed promise and having sort of a proof of concept that you would be able to discover that possibility. And that's happened twice with TELUS, as you're describing here, and then Kickstarter for the book that we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
What's the lesson there? I mean, I think that for a lot of people, they'd listen to this and wonder, you know, I think I hear that, and I think that that would take a lot of guts, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree. So what have you learned from those experiences that's informed you as a artist slash, you know, entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's tough because I feel like we had a certain amount of luck in both those projects. But at the same time, I guess that wasn't everything. I don't know. I guess the advice would be just follow through. I think that was, when I think back to Playground, that was kind of one of the mantras, was just, let's just do it. Let's just give it a shot. And, you know, and to be fair, we actually tried a few other things before it came to its sort of like incarnation that worked. There's a few failures, but I guess once you recognize something was working and we were committed to set the date, make it happen, and I guess allow ourselves to be. I mean, for me, that's a big part of art in general, is just that it's so about the process. I feel like the quality of the work is going to be whether other people enjoy it or not. And so you need to be able to back that up, I think, if you're going to take it anywhere. But a big part of it is the process and what you learn and the problems that you have to solve throughout it.
Yeah, and really, for me, it's like just like putting yourself out there. I mean, that would be my sort of interpretation of the experience you guys have had. It's like you mentioned the word luck, and that's going to play a role to some degree, and maybe it played a role to a large degree in the case of both those projects. But for me, the point is that if you hadn't put yourself out there in the first place, the luck wouldn't have been able to intersect with what you're doing. So, I think for a lot of people, they struggle to take those first steps because they want some assurances. And in each case, I've noticed as I've watched you guys do these projects that you just kind of went for it. And I don't think it was naive that you're like, oh, I'm sure it'll take care of itself. You know, you did what you could to try to create the possibility of luck.
Yeah, I think so. I think I would agree with that too. Yeah, because it's not like all of a sudden, you know, I won a lotto ticket or I won some award and like there was a genie and then, you know, that was my award. I get one of those bottles with a genie in it.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Let's talk about how you became a photographer in the first place. What got you moving down this road? Because I'm always interested to hear from people why they, you know, set out to do something that's, it's just, there's not a lot of people making a living as an artist, you know, and so I'm interested to hear what compelled you to move in that direction, like whenever that started.
Thanks, man. This is an interesting question. I find it interesting myself just because it's not like I ever had this sort of like real crazy passion for photography. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say I did, you know, like, you know, you read the photographer's bio and it's like, well, I got my first camera when I was 12 and I knew at that point.
He emerged from the womb and he took an incredible Polaroid pic.
Exactly. Like for me, I guess my father was into photography. He always had a 35 millimeter SLR film camera and he was at all the family events. But And you know what? Probably more over than any of, like, just seeing him just snapping photos, was the fact that there were actually like prints of his, some like beach scenes, like just kind of like landscape shots. So they were good. And actually, when I think about them, they're good photos. And seeing that, I guess, was an influence, a bigger influence than probably I've given him credit for, or have even thought about giving him that credit. And so just seeing that photography as a medium is more than just sort of like the snap side of things. There's a result. So I guess that played a part of the role. And then a friend of mine who, he's one of those friends, his name's Trevor Undy. He's one of those friends that's just like dripping in creative, artistic talent and ability. It's sort of anything that he tries or puts his hands onto definitely is just really well done. And he was actually one of the first people that kind of got me. He was into, you know, in high school, he got in maybe grade 11 or 12. He had a camera, film camera. And then I got one and just kind of played around with it a little bit. And I guess and that was kind of really all it was. And I think, I don't know what it's like for other people, but as I was sort of getting into my 20s and trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing with my life, I was quite lost, actually, when I think about it. And the idea of trying to make a living as a photographer seemed terrifying. But at the same time, I found myself just finding opportunity. There was an opportunity that kind of presented itself while I was living in the UK, in London. And a friend said, hey, Addie, I just saw this job advertised for someone they need like someone to work at this studio. And you're into photography, aren't you? And so that friend just kind of like suggested this ad, and I went and applied for this job, and I became one of the assistants at the studio. And I guess really like that, I owe that friend, Paulie Green, I guess a lot, really, because I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there was never a massive amount of, like, a clear vision of that I wanted to be a photographer. I kind of just, out of feeling lost, decided, well, I may as well just choose something I'm kind of interested in to just get a job for now.
And when your friend said to you, hey, you're a photographer, aren't you? You were like, yeah, I guess I am. You're willing to say, yeah, okay, yeah, I am.
Yeah, I guess
that could have been a moment where you're like, oh, I don't know, I'm thinking about it, but I need more time to contemplate it.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point. That actually kind of makes me feel good about the fact that despite the fact that I was feeling very lost and uncertain about what I wanted out of life and a career and stuff, I still had the fortitude to say, yeah, I'm going to go for that and put myself on the line. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of how my story began. And then I guess I just continued down that path, eventually studied it. And when I returned to Vancouver and studied it for 2 years, and that gave me a stronger foundation in the technical side of things. And then just started assisting more photographers here in Vancouver and did some internships in LA and Toronto, and yeah, I guess gradually sort of built up confidence and eventually met my Englishman, Kev Holloway.
I love that he's yours. He belongs to you.
My little Englishman.
Do you belong to him equally, or how does that work?
No, not at all.
What's the state of photography in 2016? Obviously, photography has been digital for some time, and I know that you went to school at a time when there probably was still film happening and it was in transition. So in 2016, like, describe to me where we're at with photography as far as, you know, the essential service that it is for somebody to be an expert in photography versus everybody has an iPhone and they take pretty good pictures. What's that like for you as a photographer in 2016?
Well, I mean, I think, so yeah, I mean, everything's digital these days. There's niche, photographers that will still shoot film. I'm sure there's still some fashion stuff, and some, you know, really high end portrait, photography that is still shot on film. And to be honest, I enjoy film and I'll always, I think experiment and explore film just because as an aesthetic, but generally it's a digital world. And what that allows is people to, you know, it allows the everyday person with a camera and that has successfully photographed a bunch of things, bunch of snaps and holidays and whatever, to feel like they can put themselves into a position as a professional to make money from it. And I guess the big difference is it's one thing to be able to consistently take good photos of stuff as they happen. And I think what sets the professional photographers apart is the ability to produce imagery based on a desired outcome.
Right. So there's capturing candid photography or casually assembling your friends into a pyramid on the beach. But there's still the art form of artfully putting people into a pyramid on the beach or wherever. It's like exactly. the conceptual stuff versus just on the fly.
Exactly. And so like as a professional, to be a professional photographer, that means that you're getting paid to take photographs, right? And so whether that means you're just photographing, you know, families or dogs or you're photographing, you know, for advertising agencies, which are working for companies and businesses. At the end of the day, whatever it is that you're getting paid, to photograph these things, you need to be able to get your client what it is that they want. And so that's what I think the more experience and the more technical experience and know-how that you have allows you to be better at consistently delivering quality imagery.
And does it work both ways with digitization, like in the sense that are photographs being consumed way more than ever before, and in a way that offsets the availability of digital cameras? Are there more images being consumed because it's not just print, but in people's everyday lives, they're constantly, is there more imagery floating around? Is that a good thing for photographers? More opportunities for
professional
shoots?
I don't know. It's tricky. I don't really know. Because on one hand, yeah, there's imagery, you know, everywhere because we go onto Facebook and there's ads on the side and there's, you know, people's even like, with the way Facebook works, you know, it brings up, you know, hey, you've been a member for 5 years and celebrate by posting these photos again. And so, you know, photos do have more of a way to be showcased. But in some ways, I almost feel that despite that, people often don't do a lot with their photos. You know, there's a lot of people that have really nice cameras, and they'll take a lot of photos and maybe they'll make it onto Facebook. I think it's really important to do something with your photos, which is kind of what led to us making this book too, as purely as an artist, as a photographer. That is something that, you know, Kev and I wanted to create, something that would last and has the ability to get old on a desk or a bookshelf.
Right. It must feel nice to have the physical book because it's an attractive book. It looks great. So it must be nice to be able to share that and to physically hand it to somebody.
Yeah. It feels
or throw it at them. I mean, don't get me wrong. It doesn't have to be handed to them politely. I don't know how you share things with people.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nice to have all the options.
Mm-hmm. Just dish it out.
Yeah.
Should get like one of those, like at sporting events, they have like the T-shirt cannon.
Yeah.
You should get the So It Is Vancouver cannon. And just
so
like
just for context, it's like a 12-inch by 9-inch, 240-page hardcover book.
Yeah.
So the idea that you're proposing is we like launch that many of these into crowds just in general.
It could be crowds. It could be like a drive-by
classrooms.
Situation. Classrooms. I don't know. Maybe if you got a very sophisticated machine, you could shoot it at people's coffee tables.
I mean, I think that would be the ideal. You know what I mean?
That could be the new distribution model. You know, people talk. I know that there's technologies being explored for drones delivering mail in the future, or Amazon's exploring. But forget that. That's not, it's kind of like sometimes you want to leapfrog technology and just cut to the chase. And I think that if you had a machine that took the item and delivered it to where it lives, that's more sophisticated. So how about a machine?
Well, what about this? What about this?
Go on.
You got this book cannon strapped to a drone.
Nice. It's inevitable.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. It's got to have the drone. It's just rather than putting it on the front porch, put it where it belongs.
Yeah.
Put it on the coffee table.
Right through the open window. just slips it right in there. It lands just nicely beside or on the coffee table.
I'm excited about what that could do for sales for you guys if you could explore that technology. Of course, you'd need to do another Kickstarter campaign to create that technology.
Do you think we could just like open it up to the audience right now just to be like
be
the listeners? I guess it's just like if anyone has the know-how and or the technology and or... you know, the capital to make this happen.
Get it going.
Reach out. Yeah.
Make it happen. And if somebody follows through on that and proves it can be done and it's all put together, would you give them a free copy of the book?
Well, you know, I don't like to talk about like the deep ins and outs of business deals. Like we'll have to leave that to the business deal at the time.
Maybe a discount?
Yeah. I'm sure it's safe to say they could get a discount.
All right. Okay. Well, you heard it, folks. If
and maybe they'd get a book.
They get a book. So
I don't want to close.
It's not guaranteed, but they might get a book. If they do, maybe get it. It will definitely be discounted, but it's not clear how much the discount will be. Is I think what I'm hearing here.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a lot of incentive for a lot of hard work that may or may not result in anything. But that kind of brings us back to the theme of your exploration of the arts, which is just get started. Give it a whirl, hope for the best, and maybe you'll have some luck along the way.
Yeah.
Adam, thank you for talking.
Jeff, thanks for having me.
Well, that's it. That was the interview I did with Adam this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Before I told you to go to adamandkev.com, that's an option. But if you specifically want to go to the website for the book itself, you can go to soitisvancouver.com. Stay tuned, folks. We're swapping over to Dunkin' Donuts right now. I was just talking to Duncan, and some of his friends are in this book. So it shows you it's a real thing. It has not been invented. I'm Jeff Bryant. See you soon.